This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts. This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
This next guest we actually caught up with in Dallas last month at the BNY Mellon Pershing Insight 22 conference. We talked about investing in what's often called vice companies. So great to have back with us.
Dan Ahrens is Managing Director and Portfolio Manager at Advisor Shares Investments, joining us from Dallas. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on again, guys.
Well, it's great to have you back. My first question is, did you get COVID at that event? Because I did.
Oh, I did not.
I'm
sorry. That makes two of us, Dan. I'm glad to hear that you were okay after that, because Carol came back from Texas with a little gift that ended up lasting, what, Carol, about a month.
Yeah, I ended up with back-to-back COVID because I had a rebound case. It was not fun. But it was so fun that we got to meet and catch up with you and talk a little bit about vice investing. We've been checking out some of your ETFs. They're actively managed. They invest in things like cannabis. There's a handful of them. There's also psychedelics. There's hotel. There's restaurants. They've all had a pretty good month overall. Tell us about your world and if you're seeing inflows into these funds and how you're thinking about them in today's current environment.
Certainly. And there's quite a few different funds that we have, but a lot of people have been interested in investing in certain themes. It's a good thing you can do in ETFs. And, we've always espoused a little bit about investing in vice. And what that really means, though, is just investing in people's habits, investing in what people do, no matter what the stock market's doing or no matter what the economy's doing. And that's why there's probably some more eyeballs on our types of funds, because the Fed's raising rates. There's all this talk about, is it a recession, is it not a recession, or are they moving the goal line? But
Dan, are eyeballs meaning that people are actually investing money in your funds?
Yeah. So, we think people should be looking at the vice investments. Now, for investment, our cannabis funds have once again been seeing some inflows, some movement in this past month, and that might be what you're referring to. So, a few different things to talk about here, but we've always said that alcohol, even tobacco stocks, things like gaming, so these are things that have a long history of weathering difficult times or rough markets. Historically, they've done it for decades, holding up better in recessionary or rough times. I can't say they're always going to go up when the market's going down or anything crazy like that, but they have a long history of holding up.
What is now, Dan, I want to jump in here because we don't have a ton of time, and I'm really curious about consumer behavior. It's something that I've been thinking a lot about because the consumer is absolutely in charge when it comes to this economy. But and I get what you're saying about tobacco. I mean, it's, after all, it's addictive. So, you know, in recessionary times, it's held up. Alcohol, I'm wondering, do people trade down? Because we've been hearing about, from Walmart, for example, that people are trading down when it comes to generics versus name brands. I'm wondering if we see that type of behavior when it comes to vices.
We commonly do. Now, it's been too short term. We don't really have the statistics yet for what's going on right now. But what we'll typically see, actually, in the last few years, craft beers have been very hot, and craft liquors, a lot of, you know, your smaller batch designer alcohols have been more in vogue. But if things last, if we actually go into a real recession, what you're going to see is more of the middle brands and more of the mass-produced beer holding up better than some of the other things. We might see, as you said, some people trading down from the higher-end liquors. That's true.
I want to ask you about psychedelics, because we recently in Bloomberg Pursuits did a whole thing on magic mushrooms.
The entire Pursuits section last week dedicated to it.
It's pretty remarkable, right? And talks about psychedelics, yeah, but also consumer products. What else did we talk about? Well,
alternative meats,
right?
Based off of fungi and you know, the root of mushroom. Really interesting stuff happening in the space.
So what are you seeing, and what's, I'm curious about the opportunities for you, since it's actively managed. Are you finding more opportunities, companies publicly held, to actually invest in?
Yeah, a few years ago, it wouldn't have been possible to have a psychedelics ETF like we do. That's ticker symbol PSIL, which is short for psilocybin. Mm-hmm. But now there are enough companies to invest in. But I want to stress to people, it's still a very small fund. These are microcap stocks, but we have a whole handful listed on the New York Stock Exchange, or more often on NASDAQ. But people need to understand, investing in a psychedelics company is, it's a lot different than cannabis that we also invest in. Psychedelics, we're talking about real biotech pharmaceutical companies here doing real research on mental health treatments that can be used with all sorts of psychedelics. Psilocybin mushrooms,
right,
is the most common. But brain injury, PTSD, right, depression, we know that a lot of those drugs have been overprescribed by big pharma, and I think this is a good solution.
Yeah, we've definitely covered that in the magazine Business Week. Dan, thanks so much. Dan Ahrens, Managing Director, Portfolio Manager of Advisor Shares Investments.
When cybercriminals strike, the difference between a catastrophic event and resilience is preparedness. Finance leaders who plan ahead can thwart the damage posed by ransomware. Yet in a recent EY poll, only 23% of directors expressed confidence in their organization's ability to respond to a ransomware attack. Cyber preparedness is just one facet of the complex risk landscape finance leaders face every day. Now more than ever, it's vital to keep ahead of developments. Cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic. on Bloomberg Radio.
I don't know if you noticed it, Tim. You probably did because you watched this closely. Bitcoin and Ether, the world's two largest digital tokens, headed toward their best month since 2021 amid a revival of risk appetite in global markets and optimism about an Ethereum network upgrade.
I saw this and I thought to myself, talk about, you know, correlation between U.S. equity markets. Because,
risk on?
Yeah, risk on. And I think that's certainly what we're seeing. I'm interested what we hear from Doug Schwenk, though, our next guest, CEO at Digital Asset Research. They provide crypto data, crypto data for institutions. We should note that Bloomberg did announce a partnership with Digital Asset Research back in June of 2022 to provide terminal users with clean crypto pricing. Doug, good to have you with us. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thanks. Well, I want to start with pricing and what Carol mentioned, that we're seeing the best month in what, Carol? About a year?
Yeah. Since 2021.
Yeah, for Bitcoin and for Ether. Is this just risk on? Is that what it is?
Well, I think we're looking at the coming Ethereum merge where we go to proof of stake. That's really, I think, the biggest story in the near term. Obviously, there's a huge macro impact here as well. The fact that the Fed is raising rates as people expect, 75 basis points yesterday, I think that's a big part of the story as well.
Can you? I just want to follow up on that and have you explain proof of stake versus proof of work for our audience if they haven't been following this closely.
Yeah, so historically, Ethereum and today, Ethereum validates transactions with proof of work. So there are miners, you may have heard about this with Bitcoin. It's both Bitcoin and Ethereum. It's the way that that people in a decentralized network agree on transactions. So proof of work involves solving a math puzzle to agree on what the right solution to that puzzle is. And then if there's enough consensus, as it were, the word is consensus that suggests what we will all agree are the right transactions to validate on the network. Proof of work is a much more kind of computer-intensive algorithm versus proof of stake, where we're going to see people put their assets at risk. So I'm going to stake some assets, and if I confirm transactions on the network, if I say, look, this Ethereum transaction goes through because it's a valid transaction, I put my assets at risk. And if I am wrong and I validate transactions that are nefarious, then I'll lose some amount of my assets. So proof of stake is much more driven by what I put at risk instead of do I solve the right math problem and therefore confirm the right transactions.
So you're all about, first of all, there's a bunch of us who are like, okay, wait, I got to Google more and understand this. I mean, it's funny, I did a Future of Money panel at BNY Mellon Pershing Insight in June. Tim and I were there and we were talking, and I had a bunch of crypto experts who really understand this. And they said, you know, the language, where we are in this whole world is very, very early on. And there's, you know, we're kind of learning and finding our way, Doug, on this, including the terminology. And so we're kind of learning as we go. But you talk about clean crypto pricing, and that's what you're getting to, I assume.
Well, we think about pricing coming from those who are transacting data. I think that's a little bit different than the validation, the proof of work, proof of stake,
okay,
you know, the Ethereum merge. We pull prices from the likes of a Coinbase or Kraken or similar types of exchanges, and we try to clean up those because it's a very unregulated world, and when exchanges are unregulated, we see some bad behavior, and so when we think about like wash trading or KYC and AML issues or other types of things, we just want to make sure that the price that people see is a high quality price, and we've seen from people like Michael Saylor at
MicroStrategy.
He said, look, MicroStrategy, yeah. He said, look, I can't rely on what I see out there, and that's been in the Wall Street Journal. It's been on Bloomberg, it's been in other places. Look, we want to make sure that when people are relying on a price, they know that it's a high quality price.
I mean, that's what happens when there are different exchanges selling sort of the same thing, right, Doug? I mean, okay, we only have a minute left, but I want to get your take on this because Carol and I were talking about this ahead of the interview. And it's just, I think a lot of this is so confusing for the end consumer. And I wonder if that is a barrier to adoption. That plus the volatility that we've seen over the last year. Is that a barrier to the adoption in the industry?
And just have about 30 seconds.
Of course. It is a big barrier. And I think there's lots of, help that we could see from, from regulators and, congressional and other leaders who could bring kind of clarity to some of these issues and help us with a better framework for mm-hmm. crypto prices. But absolutely, it's a huge barrier.
Well, we'll be sure to continue this conversation with you, Doug, in the future. Doug Schwank, he's Chief Executive Officer at DAR Digital Asset Research. It's a provider of crypto asset data and research.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
It's all about the climate. We're going to talk about the author of a book about climate restoration, a different way of really protecting our environment and really making a difference.
Yeah, I get, it's interesting, Carol. We talk about technologies that can actually help us avoid a catastrophe when it comes to climate change. And the author, who's going to be joining us in just a second, Peter Fakowski, argues that there are actually technologies out there that are safe and effective in reducing carbon.
Yeah, this is an interesting dude. He's an MIT-educated physicist and engineer. He's worked for NASA. He's also worked at the Fairchild Schlumberger AI Lab in Palo Alto, California. So he looks at this from a very, it sounds like, scientific way. So let's get to Peter. He joins us now via Zoom from Los Altos, California. Peter, it is good to have you here with us. We've only got a certain amount of time. Climate, anything with the climate is a big topic that you could spend hours on. Tell us about your thesis. What is climate restoration?
Well, climate restoration is very interesting. It's the goal of restoring a climate that humans have actually survived long term. And so it's much more radical than the conventional thinking of trying to reduce the damage. It's the engineering idea of we want to restore what works for human beings. Well, and it turns out that we have the technology and the finance to do it. We just need to start talking about it because we've been talking about a much worse goal.
What's interesting is I've never heard of this technology mm-hmm. that you argue we have right now. Ocean pasture restoration, for example, synthetic limestone manufacture, seaweed permaculture, and methane oxidation. These are the four technologies you say that can help us get us there. Let's start with ocean pasture restoration. How does it work?
Yeah, so the four methods, first of all, the reason that you haven't heard about them is that we haven't had a goal of restoring the climate yet. Hmm. These have all been around for quite a while. Ocean pasture restoration, also called ocean iron fertilization, it is the same process that nature uses to cool the planet before ice ages. And so nature removes a trillion tons of CO2 before each ice age. There have been 10 in the last million years. And we know how to do the same thing. And the idea is, we all know that photosynthesis, like trees, absorbs CO2. But the trouble with trees, of course, is that they end up dying after a few decades and the carbon goes back into the air when the trees rot. In the ocean, when plants grow, they sink. And then there's no oxygen in the deep ocean. And so they take the carbon with them as they, and of course, a lot of the plants are eaten by fish and all the detritus sinks into the deep ocean. And as I said, that's how nature cooled the planet for our ice ages. And so the way this operates is, and it was tested 10 years ago. It was tested also by Mount Pinatubo 30 years ago. It's localized and it's intermittent. So you do it, they do it in eddies, which are about 100 miles in diameter in the ocean. And the eddy contains the iron. The iron is a phenomenally small amount. It's like a hundredth of a teaspoon per square meter. And within days, it turns green. from blue. Blue is beautiful, but it's not green. Green mm-hmm. is where you have photosynthesis. And then within another week or so, fish start coming in and feeding on their on the luncheon counter there. And off you go. When it was tested, they were told that they sequestered 100 million tons of CO2.
That sounds like a lot. What's That's interesting is, you know, and we're going to continue the conversation in just a moment and maybe talk about some of the other methods. Just got about a minute here, and then we'll continue on the other side of the break. But I do wonder, at the same time, do we not also, though, need to think about reducing our carbon footprint?
Yes, we absolutely do. Yes and no. We need to reduce our carbon footprint. Worrying is really less effective than doing it. Hmm. And so I focus on just do it. I'm planning to have an electric car be my next car when my current car wears out. And I think probably a lot of the people listening are already planning on that. So that transition is happening. But we haven't been thinking about actually restoring the climate, and especially right. for our young listeners. Plan on being around rather than giving up the ghost. Because if you plan on being around, then you'll pay attention to these big four solutions.
I want to continue with that and talk seaweed permaculture and exactly what it is and how it gets carbon out of the ecosystem.
Yeah, seaweed permaculture is a variation on the iron fertilization. So as I said, the important thing in the ocean is when you grow plants, when they die, they sink where there's no oxygen and the oxygen stays out. And with seaweed permaculture, the nutrients that are missing are brought up from the deep ocean in a large pipe, solar powered, takes very, very little energy. And then the seaweed grows. Some of the seaweed is used, is actually harvested and sold for product, some of which sell for $1,000 a ton. And probably half the seaweed ends up falling deep into the ocean. Some of it cut, some of it just naturally falling. And it's fairly simple. The difficulty is they build a structure that the kelp grows on, and that takes some technology. But just like the iron fertilization, it's a commercial product.
Right.
And so it pays for itself.
Hey, Peter, you said it's a commercial product. Let's talk and end there, because I'm wondering if this is so effective, where's the money in it? And I ask that in the question, not in a cynical way, but in a way that motivates companies to do this, to make sure that we have a future.
Yes, it's an interesting challenge because we have the four pathways, and they're all self-financing. And this is the same model that put CO2 into the air. That is, we had companies selling us heat and energy, which had a byproduct of putting CO2 up. With these four products, the seaweed, the limestone, the ocean fertilization, which leads to fish, mm-hmm. you get product which has a byproduct of pulling CO2 out.
Right.
Now, the challenge is, and this is something that we're dealing with right now,
right.
is we're afraid to list these on the open market because the customers are going to say, wait a minute, my retirement depends on it. And so we want to make sure that people doing this are primarily interested in restoring the climate for our children and grandchildren.
Right.
We're only secondarily interested in making money.
Well, it almost sounds like you got to have governments involved who recognize these methods and before it gets too late. Peter Fakowski, thank you so much. Founder and Chairman Emeritus at Foundation for Climate Restoration. Check out his book that has got the title of Climate Restoration in it.
When cybercriminals strike, the difference between a catastrophic event and resilience is preparedness. Finance leaders who plan ahead can thwart the damage posed by ransomware. Yet in a recent EY poll, only 23% of directors expressed confidence in their organization's ability to respond to a ransomware attack. Cyber preparedness is just one facet of the complex risk landscape finance leaders face every day. Now more than ever, it's vital to keep ahead of developments. Cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
You drive, say you're crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, TikTok. Just about 10 and a half minutes left in today's trading session. Tim, we are getting ready to wrap up the day, wrap up the week. It's been
wrap
a
up risk the month.
On trade, wrap up the month, and we know it's been an unbelievable one for equities overall.
Yeah, it's been pretty remarkable. For the S&P 500, up 8.3% this month. The NASDAQ composite up 11% this month. Still not positive for the year, but what a difference just a month makes. Really curious to hear what Jimmy Lee has to think about it. He's the founder and CEO of the Wealth Consulting Group. They've got $2.9 billion in assets under management, and I would imagine after a rally in the last couple of days, that number's gone up a little bit. Jimmy joining us on the phone from Las Vegas. Jimmy, how are you?
I'm great, and good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon to you too. So the big question that Carol and I have been asking each other off air and asking our guests on air has been, is this just a bear market rally? Because we're getting so much conflicting data here.
Well, I'm a little surprised that we've had such a strong run with equities.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, without having a better inflation print, at least one. But as I've been saying for the last few months, I think that we could be in for a strong fourth quarter. Looks like we're getting it a little bit earlier. So what I think has changed is that maybe while the consumer sentiment is still awful, just horrible, I think investor sentiment may have changed. And maybe instead of selling into the rallies, it's going to be more about buying into the dips again.
Hmm. Who do you believe, consumers or investors? And some of the economic data points I will point out that we've talked about certainly today are Michael McKee, who follows global economics, says, you know, a lot of this data is backward looking. And you have to remember that markets tend to be forward looking. So I'm just curious, when you look at it, and then let's throw the bond market into it. You know, that 10-year, I feel like comfortably staying below that 3% mark. I mean, how do you kind of, you know, size each of them against one another?
It's very confusing, and especially with the bond market, but I think that the consumer is still strong. I think in certain areas of the economy, such as housing, other areas that have been, you know, that were just bid up so high, I think obviously we're seeing pullbacks there, which is great. I think it's healthier to get that in some of these sectors that were so hot. But, you know, I think that, again, I've been talking about record cash balances with the consumer, which we know makes up the majority of our U.S. economy. And so as long as the consumer keeps spending, then businesses can also invest down the road. So, you know, I think that that's the key, is consumers need to continue spending. And one thing that, you know, I've been noticing over the last several months is that not just the consumer, but major investors were so bearish. It's been a long time since I felt that so many investors, professional investors, were so bearish that it made me feel like we could have been kind of nearing the bottom, and here we are with a nice bounce.
We have seen, though, and our Vince Signorelli has written about this, Tim, we talked about it, that the U.S. personal savings rate as a percentage of disposable income has been dropping steadily since the pandemic, while revolving credit, we're talking about credit card debt, has been steadily rising. Jimmy, doesn't that maybe bar you that at some point that's going to all come home to roost?
you know, as long as we don't go into a real recession, I think we'll be okay. So sure, those statistics are not good. And there was a lot of money, still is, floating around our economy. But as long as we don't lose major, lots of jobs across the board, across, you know, industries, I think we're going to be all right. And so I think, you know, while the long end of the bond market is predicting kind of a weak economy, I think what we could be set up for is a very volatile third quarter. So maybe we end up, you know, getting some sell-offs off these recent gains, some profit-taking from traders. But I think in the fourth quarter, we've got some catalysts, such as potentially Ukraine. We've got the Fed, which is the biggest one. So if the Fed, you know, at some point when they say that they're going to pause, my guess is that the market's already going to be up 15% by then, which we may be getting close to now. But that could be a
Up 15% from lows?
From the lows, which obviously we're pretty close to now. So we could get some trading back and forth. But by the time they say that, I think we're going to get a lot of the returns back already. And then once they say that, I think that's going to help sustain a rally in equities.
So you don't think the Fed is going to continue raising rates? You think the pause is coming in September? I want to make sure I understand this.
No. I think they're going to raise rates at least once or twice for
okay.
sure. But the second time could be much lower, as most people predict, but and as the futures markets are predicting. But you know, if the economic data seems lousy, and if inflation data actually comes lower over the next several months, then I think they've got a chance to say that. And so, as we talk about information lagging, I actually do think inflation is getting better. We just haven't seen it in the numbers yet. And so, hopefully, this next month, you know, we'll see that.
Hey, you're watching the high yield market. Always important to get an idea of whether or not we're starting to see more companies get into trouble. Tell us more about that and what you are seeing.
Yeah, we've been watching that, and it's one of the triggers that we use to be risk off to a degree. And you know, but the spreads have kind of tightened a little bit. So as they were widening, we were getting a little bit concerned. But what I do know is that there are some institutional investors out there that are getting ready for, you know, a potential opportunity if we do have a recession, and if there are opportunities to buy distressed debt at major discounts. I know that a lot of the players that have historically done that are getting ready to do it, raising funds and calling on people like this, like us, to see if we have investors that might be interested in that. And so we're really watching that, but they've tightened a little bit, so it's getting a little better.
What about when it comes to the global outlook here and how you're thinking about Ukraine, how you're thinking about energy in Europe, and how you're thinking about China?
Yeah, I think that it's going to get better. So I'm hopeful, you know, that as time continues on, that the global economy becomes more and more open, and China, you know, doesn't close up again. And so I'm hoping that the COVID situation gets better, not worse, and that the global economy improves. I think the U.S. will lead it, and again. But I think there are some values overseas, and so I think investors still should be allocated overseas.
All right, we got to run. Hey, listen, nice to spend some time with you. Jimmy Lee, founder and CEO of Wealth Consulting Group, and it has about $2.9 billion in assets under management, joining us once again on the phone from Las Vegas.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, let's face it, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. There's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through.
Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.